Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. Our guest this morning is Republican Senate Leader Stephen Harding. We're going to be talking about a lot of the outcomes of the 2024 legislative session that just recently ramped up. And I'm excited to have him on and pick his brain about a number of issues. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to the show.
Morgan, it's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Happy that you're here. You know, this is your first time as a big leader, the Republican leader of the Senate. So how did it feel? How did it go the last few months?
I couldn't be any prouder of the Senate Republican Caucus. It's an amazing group of senators to lead. They do an incredible job for their districts. In my opinion, they all resoundingly deserve re-election as we move into the November elections this fall. I think it was positive experience this session. I think we got some good things done in terms of some small public safety measures, some other measures. A lot more can be done. But I think more importantly than anything else, we prevented a lot of bad things from happening. And that's how I look at this session being positive, is the fact that there was a number of bills that came out of the committee process that could have passed. And because of the efforts of my fellow Senate Republican colleagues, we prevented those measures from moving forward.
What are some? Could you give us an example?
Yeah. So one is the Green Monster Bill, as it was dubbed, House Bill 5004. That bill basically gave unfettered control and authority to the unelected bureaucrat, which is the Deep Commissioner, to implement regulations potentially that could impose taxes and fees, particularly as it relates to energy. We have the second highest energy cost in the country. Now, if you implement something like that, you could drive those costs even further for your electric bills and for your at the gas tank when you fill up. That was one bill that I think could be extremely costly, extremely detrimental to the people of the state of Connecticut, really moving Connecticut in a negative direction as it relates to our economy and unaffordability. So we were able to address that bill head on and prevent it from moving forward and even getting called for a vote in the Senate. There was another bill, too, which would have made employers basically pay striking workers while they were striking. Talk about, you know, just illogical policy, but also, you know, economically detrimental as well. You know, the government getting involved in the striking process and putting their hand on the pulse of it and moving it in a certain direction is, you know, antithetical to how these negotiations should be going. There's a give and take on both sides to strike deals. To do something like that would have really been detrimental to many of the manufacturing companies throughout our state, which we say we care about. When you implement or promote policies like that, you really start to question how much you really truly care about these manufacturers. So those were two big policies that the Senate Republicans helped prevent And I think, again, there were measures that would have been extremely detrimental to the people of the state. And my fellow colleagues in the Senate Republican Caucus did a great job preventing those from moving forward.
I want to go back for a moment to what you dubbed the Green Monster Bill. Is that something that you would expect to come back up next year, 2025?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, there's some aspects of the bill which I think myself and many of my Senate Republican colleagues would support. Incentive-based things, you know, other measures that were moderate and conscience and common sense as it relates to, you know, curbing our carbon footprint. But, you know, the biggest aspect that I had a problem with was this unfettered control of the commissioner, again, to implement fees and taxes and things that will simply just drive up your energy cost exponentially. So I do expect some version of that to come out. And again, it's going to be received with much skepticism, and I would say the same amount of pushback from my Senate Republican colleagues if a version of the bill includes this unfettered authority to the deep commissioner.
When I spoke with State House Speaker Matt Ritter, he had basically said that there are initiatives in there that he knows that Republicans do support, as you acknowledged. But it's obviously part of a larger package. Would it be more helpful, maybe more strategic, or perhaps something that could move some policy forward in Connecticut if these bills were actually put together in smaller packages rather than just one big item?
Yes, and I think that's the point. I think that, you know, we kind of moved this session, or the Democrats did at least, in putting these huge omnibus bills with all these different policy proposals and jammed into one. And what happens is when you do that, you know, it makes it that much more difficult for the bill to pass because it's going to obviously receive opposition, particularly the more extreme aspects of the policy as it relates again to you know, this unfettered authority of the deep commission. You put that in a bill, it doesn't matter what else the bill may have, it's going to be met with resistance. And so, you know, what happens is other policies that would have gotten strong support, bipartisan support, kind of go by the wayside. I would like to see moving into next session an approach in which these bills are taken up more policy by policy as opposed to one huge bill, you know, with 90 plus sections and trying to cram that all into one. I think what happens is good policy goes by the wayside because of bad policy within these huge bills.
You had also brought up the striking workers bill. I'm talking this morning on Face Connecticut with Senate Republican leader Stephen Harding. Senator, that's the bill that Governor Lamont, when he spoke after the session had completed, said that he doesn't necessarily support the concept behind that particular bill. And so that begs the question, is that going to get his support? Do you think it would?
Well, yeah. So that was the whole, you know, there was a provision that did pass that I think the governor, if he hasn't already vetoed, said that he was going to veto, which was this bill that tiptoed around it and gave a $3 million appropriation to the comptroller to pay to quote unquote low income workers. And it was kind of a wink, wink, nod, nod. This is going to go to pay for benefits potentially for striking workers. And the governor, I think, you know, rightfully said, look, if you support a policy that would pay money to striking workers, then have an up and down vote on that. Don't play, you know, these cute little games that are really the opposite of transparency. It's kind of, you know, cloaked in the night. Of, you know, saying that we're going to appropriate some money. It's going to go to this low-income workers, which no one has a clear definition for, but it's really going to go in an election year to pay for striking workers. So the governor criticized it rightfully so. And I think what he said is have an up-and-down vote on whether or not public funds should be used for striking workers, which I would agree. And I would argue that, you know, he laid out some skepticism even for that underlying policy, and he's right to do so. So my hope is that he continues to oppose that type of policy, so as we move into next session, if this proposal is brought up once again, I think that we as Republicans can gather around the fact that the governor is going to veto this measure, and therefore it shouldn't move forward.
Senator, I was a little surprised to see how the artificial intelligence bill had fallen apart. I figured that it would ultimately have gone through, but it didn't. You know, there was some pushback in the Senate, but it ultimately did pass. It didn't make it to the House when Governor Lamont signaled that that was a bill he'd veto, concerned about what that would mean for businesses in the future, putting AI restrictions in place today that we don't quite know how would play out. Even as soon as 5 years into the future. And so, you know, talking about that AI bill that would have impacted civilian use, business use, electoral use, as well as revenge porn and the prevention of that, you know, what is your take on that AI bill and how it ultimately failed to get to any kind of a significant finish line?
Well, I think that you laid it out in terms of previously about 5004 and the speaker, you know, alluding to the fact that, you know, maybe there's a policy by policy approach that we need to start breaking up these bills and looking at some of the policies that we can get strong bipartisan support on and having separate votes on those to move those forward so we actually get good policy passed, as opposed to, again, putting, you know, good policy bipartisan measures into bills that would be with measures that are not good policy or at least would be met with significant resistance by the Republicans. I think this is a classic example of that, in that there were a lot of good measures within this. I mean, we don't doubt for a second that AI needs to be regulated in some fashion. There needs to be regulation, legislation, laws surrounding how AI works, what you're allowed to do with it, what you're not. And because there are some aspects of it which are really positive, and there's other aspects, as you alluded to, with revenge porn and the like, which are very negative and need to be regulated and cracked down on. And so, you know, you had measures like that, which we could have cracked down on that in policies that we could have passed, but it got jammed in with other measures as it relates to AI that were filled with potentially unintended consequences and a lot of red tape and regulation for small businesses. I mean, as an example, and I think one of the parts that the governor questioned and had an issue with is, you know, using AI in your hiring process. I mean, if you're a small business and you used AI or some sort of software system that had AI, as it relates to, you know, funneling down into the best candidates to reach out to for interviews, to make your process just a little bit easier, there was a regulation in there that you'd have to call up every single person that the AI basically told you, you know, filtered out of the system of potential candidates. You know, things like that could be a huge drain on resources for a small business that's just simply trying to utilize technology to make their hiring processes a little more efficient. So again, I think there were aspects of the bill that just had a lot of unintended consequences, which could put a lot of cost and time and resources on the burden of small businesses, which I think was the general opposition to the bill. But there's no doubt there was good measures in terms of areas that we absolutely have to crack down on. Ultimately, I would like to see the federal government also, you know, because this has become such an international issue, you would hope the federal government would kind of have one standard across the country to make it easier, as opposed to going kind of state by state here.
I'm Morgan Cunningham, and he is Senator Stephen Harding, the Senate Republican leader. And this morning on Face Connecticut, we're running down a bunch of the big topics that came out of the 2024 legislative session. They're talking about AI. One more question related to that AI proposal. If it were to come up again next year, as expected, those smaller bills, that's something that you would see being more possible, because obviously it's a longer session. Lawmakers can propose more bills. Is that something, is that an approach that you would like to see?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, again, you're already starting to hear from the speaker, who obviously, you know, controls the calendar, very much controls at least the House Democrats' agenda, and helps obviously influence the Senate Democrat agenda, that he's looking to do a smaller piece-by-piece operation as it relates to bills, as opposed to doing these huge omnibus bills, which we've seen over the past couple of sessions here. So I'd like to see that, and I think it's very optimistic in a long session that we're going to see that, which is a positive thing for the voters of the state, in my opinion.
Senator, let's talk about that spending of the remaining ARPA money, the American Rescue Plan.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply. It's better.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Plan COVID dollars that do have to get spent, and they are being spent as approved now for higher education, nonprofits, things of the like. These are sectors that were looking for some kind of a handout from the state. They were looking for more money. There, of course, were many other groups, but only so much money to go around. And so what is your take on that money being spent the way it was because the budget wasn't reopened? I know the Republicans weren't very pleased about that. The Democrats said, yeah, it's okay. So could you give me the Republican take on what happened there with the spending of the ARPA money?
Yeah, well, the spending of the ARPA money was really utilized as a way to enact a budget that really wasn't a budget. And that's where there's an opposition, is that I think many of the House Republicans and most of my Senate Republican colleagues would agree that this was just absolutely fiscally irresponsible how this was done. We should have opened our budget. The Democrats used this formula where they were using carry forwards from this fiscal year, moving line items over within the budget, yet, quote unquote, not opening the budget. Because the reason they wanted to do that was because if they truly opened the budget, they would have had to make the proper adjustments within the revenue cap, and they would have had to find about $150 million of efficiencies. So by utilizing these funds and carryovers and things like that, which is what the Democrats did as part of this ARPA package, and not making the adjustments necessary to find the efficiencies in the budget, we were actually, I would argue, already violating the fiscal guardrails that we put in place way back in 2017, and that those that were extended at the beginning of last session as well, which received broad bipartisan support, not only within legislators, but across the board. If you speak with constituents across the state, this is the reason why we're in the financial shape that we're in a positive financial state, these fiscal guardrails. We're violating them now, based upon what was done with this ARPA finance package. And that was the opposition. There are, in my opinion, there was some wasteful aspects of funding in that ARPA package, you know, going to certain pet projects or making certain legislators happy in their individual districts, which you don't like to see taxpayer money being spent like that when there's so many critical areas of need that are being missed. However, there were admittedly some other good areas of investment, like nonprofits and higher ed in some regards. So there were some good investments. There were some investments that I would argue are questionable. But I think what is unquestionable is the fact that we should have reopened the budget. We should have made the adjustments necessary to abide by the fiscal guardrails. The Democrats were unwilling to do that. And on top of that, what is even more financially irresponsible is the Democrats took about $250 million or so, shifted it over to bonding. So there were projects that were allocated in ARPA that we were using federal money for, not state money, federal money for. We shifted it onto bonding. So now the state taxpayers are paying for these projects with interest because it's going over to bonding. And that was all to free up more money via ARPA to spend outside the confines of the budget. And in my opinion, it set us ourselves up for about a $500 million deficit moving into fiscal year 26. And so, you know, it was just fiscally irresponsible. There's no doubt there was good investment, some good investment within it that myself and many of my Republican colleagues supported. But the overall package and how it was done was fiscally irresponsible.
Earlier in our conversation, Senator Harding, I had mentioned that press conference that Governor Lamont held at the end of the session. And one of the other items that he brought up and talked about was how the budget come 2026, he has some concerns there because obviously by that point, those federal COVID dollars are going to be poof, gone, disappeared. And, you know, when I talked with State House Speaker Matt Ritter, he talked about how there's about $250 million in ARPA funding that is considered to be repeat funding, so they're going to have to somehow replenish the dollars there and revise the budget in that way. What kind of concerns are the Republicans looking at 2 years from now with that budget once the COVID dollars really are totally gone?
You know, we're setting ourselves up for a $500,000 deficit. If you take about $300 million of the ARPA funds that were used for operational expenses, and then you take the fact that we have to abide by the revenue cap and cure the deficiencies that we currently have pursuant to our revenue cap for next year, which takes us to about another $200 million. So it's about a $500 million deficit walking into fiscal year 26. And again, you know, if these investments were truly priorities to the Democrats in Hartford, they would have opened up our budget, found the money within our operational expenses within our budget, so these nonprofits, higher eds, et cetera, can rely on this funding on a yearly basis so that we can go into next year's budget. And they're already budgeted to have the increase of investment that we've given them.
We ought to do another whole show just on the budget itself, because I want to move on to some other topics, and I thank you for your insight on that. Yeah. Senator Harding, of course, this is going to take a moment to discuss, obviously talking about the electric vehicle EV mandate, which, again, yeah, I'm hearing from the Democrats, they're now talking about a hybrid vehicle mandate. And Governor Lamont, again, during that press conference, said it's going to take younger people, suggesting certainly Connecticut residents and also in the legislature as well, to move the needle on any kind of electric vehicle or hybrid vehicle, whatever you want to consider in the future. Where are you guys at the state capitol as far as that mandate, as far as updating our cars in that area of infrastructure and transportation?
Yeah, well, I think the Democrats are absolutely going to come out with it again. The only reason why the Democrats stopped moving forward with that mandate was because they realized that there was such significant political opposition moving into an election year to mandate EV vehicles on everyone in Connecticut. They kind of took a step back and never had a vote on it. They then tried to play this kind of game, I would call it, in converting this EV mandate into simply a study. But if you look at the individuals that the study would be composed of, and what the name of the study was, which is essentially a roadmap to an EV mandate, and it really was an EV mandate, and they were just planning on how to implement the EV mandate. And that's the reason why even the study reached significant opposition from Democrats Republicans and Democrats as well, for that matter. And why ultimately, from a political perspective, it did not move forward, even the study, is because it was clear what the intentions of that study was. And so I think there's no doubt after an election, you're going to once again see a push by the Democrats in Hartford to push an EV mandate once again. And once again, there's going to be opposition from the Republicans, as it is just not good policy. We don't have any answers to the significant questions we would need to implement such a thing as this. We don't have the infrastructure electrically. You know, think about the electric aspects of this. You know, if you implemented something like that, you'd be talking about rolling blackouts or brownouts in order to get the energy necessary to have, you know, essentially every car in the state of Connecticut hooking up to this to the grid to charge every night. I mean, so These are things that have not been fleshed out, and to push a mandate, we don't even have a constructive idea on how to actually roll some of this out, is extremely illogical, to say the least. And I find it disheartening that the Democrats are once again going to try to push this issue if they have strong numbers in the majority moving into next session.
In the next session, 2025, do you expect Aiden Dying to come up again? It usually does in the long sessions. It did in 2023. Not this year. What about next?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, it's been brought up in previous sessions. You know, I have, you know, concerns about it. I understand the advocates. I mean, there are the strong advocates for it and proponents for it. I respect them greatly. I understand, you know, why they're strong advocates for the position. And I also understand the side of those that are cautious about it and some of the, you know, the slippery slope, arguments against it and implementing a policy such as this. It is one of the most difficult policies to think about as a legislator to vote on because, you know, both sides, I think, are well-intentioned. And so ultimately making the right decision for your constituents as a senator or as a representative on that bill is very, very difficult. And obviously it's such a big issue as it literally is life and death that you're handling as a legislator.
What about the pizza bill? And it seems like a simple one, but it actually isn't. So is that one that's going to be heard again?
You know what? Well, I think our state has the best pizza in the world. So, or in the country, at least as a state. I do expect it to come up once again. I think it gets met with opposition simply because we have so many big issues that we're actually trying to tackle. And then, you know, someone brings up the pizza bill. But, you know, to some individual legislator, it means a lot to them because it keeps on getting brought up. So I do expect it to get revisited once again, and we'll clamp down on it as we move towards the end of the next session.
Thank you for coming on.
John, thank you. It's great to be on with you.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.